opportunity to talk golf. I should just retire. We should just retire the segment after that pick last week. It's not going to get any better.
Yeah. It'll be a very tough act to follow. There's no question about that. But, you know, I'm right there with the Genesis Open because, you know, Adam Scott's performance was as great as you thought that it might be. Now, of course, he didn't lead the first couple of days, but Saturday and Sunday, he was just terrific. And, you know, he played it safe a little bit there on the back nine, I thought, especially on 15. But, you know, it was really fascinating to follow him on Saturday and Sunday. You know, just kind of your overall thoughts on his performance over the weekend.
He did what a veteran does. He does what somebody that's been in that situation does. I mean, he was in full control of his golf swing. With Adam Scott, he's almost always in full control of his golf swing. It's really come down to the putting. If you look at the course of his career, he is one of the best ball strikers of his generation, and there's some terrific ball strikers in his generation, such as obviously Tiger, but then Sergio Garcia and Justin Rose are also A-plus ball strikers, and he's every bit as good as those three guys in terms of just hitting the golf ball and getting it close to the hole with approach shots and driving it well. And you know, he did a great job of that over the weekend. The golf course was playing very, very difficult. It's one of the few strategic golf courses really remaining on the PGA Tour. And when I say strategic, I mean just the angles you have to play, where the bunkers are placed, where they can put one pin one day compared to the next. You really have to know your way around Riviera. He's been playing there for, a decade and a half consistently. He's almost 40 years old, and he did what a veteran does in that situation, and he made the putts that he had to, especially, I think, on the hole that you referenced, 15, I think it was. It was the birdie putt on 16, Bull. You know, to get to 11 under, that was huge because there were some players at 9 under. Sung Kang and Scott Brown were in the clubhouse at 9 under, and, you know, you don't want to go into the 18th hole at Riviera. I meant 17 is where he hits the putt. Geez, I'm getting all these great holes confused. But, yeah, he birdied the par 5, went in the 18 with a two-shot lead instead of a one-shot lead, and that was huge because 18 at Riviera, a lot can happen. That's one of the great closing holes of all in golf. But that was an awesome performance by Adam Scott. Two wins in a row for him. He also won the Australian PGA in December. And if you look at it, 3 years ago, his game really heated up, and he got back up to number one in the world for a few weeks. He had two wins in Florida at the Honda Classic, and then the WGC event that was at Doral that's now Mexico City. And, you know, who knows? He's got a long way to go to get the number one in the world again with, you know, how many ranking points he's behind Rory McIlroy and Brooks Koepka. But this could be a big year for him. And what a performance at, you know, you can make the argument that Riviera is maybe the best course on the PGA Tour.
And you had just got done talking about the challenges with the pin placements, especially on the final day. And that was one of the things, Guy, that stood out to me watching on Sunday. And the hole that really, I thought, made for the most challenging of circumstances as far as the pin placement was number 10. I mean, because you had to have a picture-perfect approach shot. If you were too short, you were in the trap. If you were too long, you were going to go right over the green and into a different trap, and you'd probably end up, I don't know, 6 or 7 feet below the hole. So number 10 seemed to be especially challenging on the final day.
Yep, and there's been all this talk in golf lately with the USGA and R&A releasing their Distance Insights project a few weeks ago about length and how to challenge the best players in the world. And the 10th hole at Riviera proves that you don't necessarily have to be a 500-yard par 4 to challenge the greats of the game. That hole is maybe 300 yards right now. I mean, it could be like 310 depending on where they set up the tees. And a lot of players, it's not even a driver par 4 for them. It's a 3-wood par 4. But if you put the pin in the right spot and have some bounce to the turf and have some bunkers that are in the right places, you can have a lot of fun with a short hole like that. It certainly wasn't easy. You didn't really see any eagle putts there. You didn't even really see that many birdies for a hole that length. In fact, it was the hole that really sunk Harold Varner, who made double bogey on that. And there were some other players that really struggled with that hole. So that's one of the more interesting holes on the PGA Tour. And what you saw was with that pin in the back right, like it was on Sunday, players are blowing it as far left as they could and trying to give themselves just every little bit of green to work with. But if you've ever seen that green, there isn't. And when the turf gets that firm, there aren't really many places that you can put that pin that's accessible even on a chip shot.
I felt bad for Harold Varner. I felt really, really bad for him because as he was going from one side of the green to the next, or I guess in some cases, you know, one trap to the next, I felt so bad for him because I've been in that position so many times before, albeit not at Riviera, but I've been in that position many, many times before. You referenced the 15th hole a few moments ago, and this was one of the best shots I think I saw all tournament long. How about Matsuyama's incredible putt on 15 on Sunday? What a putt.
Yeah, and you know what? Maybe you see one or two of those a week on the PGA Tour, and to do that on that green with all the movement on it was just fabulous. And you know, Matsuyama had a nice tournament, and he's a player who's very streaky, and he seems to be getting back into the form that he was in 2-3 years ago, and he's certainly somebody to watch as this PGA Tour season intensifies.
Again, we're talking with Guy Cipriano, the editor at Golf Course Industry Magazine. He's our guest here on Bullseye on the Afternoon. All right, well, I've got to ask you about a couple of things that you tweeted out over the weekend. You tweeted on Sunday that you weren't necessarily a huge fan of the CBS Golf production. So what was your primary issue with their presentation?
It's been a rough few weeks for the CBS Golf production team. They made some major changes heading into this season. I mean, they got rid of two veterans, Gary McCord and Peter Costas. And Peter Costas, to me, had the second toughest job on that broadcast. Jim Nance obviously has the toughest. He's the narrator. He's the one that really has to tell the story, set the scene, get the viewer thinking about the right things, or setting up the analyst to make the takes that they have to make and explain to the viewer what he or she should need to know. But Peter Costas was the roving on-course reporter that always followed the lead group or the marquee group, and that's a tough job. I don't know if anyone's ever seen, you know, somebody like a Peter Costas or a Roger Maltby or a Bones McKay at an event, but that is tough. You're following the lead group. You have, you know, couple dozen pounds of technology on you. You're watching half the shots through a camera screen. You're watching half the shots live. You have to try to be ahead of the golfers. You have all these questions coming from the production team. You know, really losing him in my mind has hurt this. And you're breaking in some announcers that haven't been on that team before. I mean, and you're breaking in some rookies. I mean, Davis Love III, a heck of a player, not the most exciting personality, trying to break into a broadcasting gig like that. A first time with that many people watching, you know, the last four weeks during the West Coast swing, that's really, really tough. Trevor Immelman has a Golf Channel experience. He's new to that broadcast. Frank Nobilo has Golf Channel experience. He's new to that broadcast. So what you did was you took a team that was very that had a lot of that really had gelled over the course of the last 10 years, really, and you added some newbies, and it's kind of chaos. You don't know really who's speaking and who's speaking about what. Some of the action that they missed, I mean, they alluded to the Harold Varner top tee shot on number 10. You know, you're thinking, why does a PGA Tour player have 150 yards into a 300-yard hole? And they didn't even show the replay of it shortly after it happened. It was like a half hour later they finally showed what Varner did, and Varner was tied for the lead or one shot behind the lead at that point. There were just a lot of issues with it, you know, dragging out maybe the CEO's interview too long. It just didn't gel. And CBS has done some great golf stuff over the years. They've really been an innovator in golf broadcasting. They certainly have some talented people in place, not only front-facing on the camera, but in production. And at the end of, you know, in the middle of last season, I don't know how many of your listeners know this or how many people are aware of this. You know, CBS had a lot of buyouts of a lot of their experienced people that were behind the scenes, and you can certainly see that that's showing here in their early broadcast in 2020.
Well, before we move on and talk about the Mexico Championship in Mexico City this coming weekend, what else stood out to you about the West Coast swing?
I would say experience ruled bull. All four winners were 30 and over, and you know, you always hear about this youth movement in golf, or the young guns, or the players just coming out of college, or the players that are skipping college. And you know, 5 years ago it was all about the Spieths and the Justin Thomases and the Daniel Bergers and the Bryson DeChambeaus, and then you had John Rahm come along, and at the end of last season you had guys like Colin Morikawa and Matthew Wolf and Victor Hovland and Joaquin Neiman. But really, experience ruled on the West Coast, off at the Sony Open in Honolulu. Mark Leishman wins at Torrey Pines, and then Adam Scott wins at Riviera, and he also had Jason Day in contention at Pebble Beach. This could be a big year for Australians in pro golf based on what's happened out West so far.
All right, well, we look ahead to this weekend, the WGC Mexico Championship in Mexico City. Can Dustin Johnson defend his crown after winning a year ago?
Absolutely. He is an overwhelming favorite in this event, in my opinion, Bull. He's played 8 rounds at the course in Mexico City. I'm not even going to try to pronounce it. It's Golf Day Club Chalupatec, I think. I'm pretty close.
That's close enough.
I'm not 100%. You're the broadcaster, so we'll leave those things to you. I'm just the writer. But, you know, he's played there this is, I believe, the third year at the tournament. He's never shot around in the 70s there. He's been in the 60s the entire time. He had an overwhelming win over Rory McIlroy last year, and Rory McIlroy, who finished second, was 5 shots clear of the field. Dustin Johnson hasn't won since the WGC Mexico last year, and he kind of had a rough end to 2019. But he's been pretty solid to start this season, Bull. He's had 4 starts, 3 top 10s. He was a top 10 in the Century Tournament Champions at the beginning of the year in Hawaii. Then he went over to Saudi Arabia and came in second. And then he just had a 10th place showing at Riviera. His only non-top 10 was at Pebble Beach, where he finished 32nd. And probably playing with his father-in-law, Wayne Gretzky, probably made him nervous. So that's probably why he didn't perform as well there. But he's had a pretty nice start to the year. He seems to have put whatever problems he had in the back half of 2019 behind him. He likes this course. This course is only 7,300 yards. Now, why do I say only? Because it's at altitude, and the ball flies 10 to 15% further there, depending on who you ask. Or really, it's like they're playing a 6,500-yard course. You can really it's tight and it's tree-lined, but there are also some angles that you can take and get the close to a lot of the greens on the par fours and in a shot. And with his success there and the way he's been playing recently, to me, he's an overwhelming favorite. And Dustin Johnson, this is one of the most impressive things about him, probably the most impressive things. He's won on the PGA Tour 12 straight years in a row. He's got 20 career PGA Tour wins. I believe he's going to make it 13 straight years with a win, and I think it's going to come as early as this weekend.
Well, that'll be a lot of fun to watch, no question about that. As you mentioned, the altitude playing a very, very large role in Mexico City this weekend. Coming up here in a few weeks, I would love to get your perspective on one of the upcoming PGA tournaments, because you played the track at which it's going to take place at Copperhead, right? That takes place here, I believe, in almost exactly a month, right?
Yep, the Valspar Championship. It's in mid-March at the Innisbrook Resort, and they have 4 golf courses there. That's one thing TV doesn't show you is the other golf courses, and the Copperhead course is where they play the PGA Tour's Valspar Championship, and it's a sweet track. It's been overseeded with ryegrass. It's funny, we were going around it a few weeks ago, and it's sort of hilly for Florida. It's only 2 miles from the Gulf of Mexico, but Innisbrook Resort has close to 90 feet elevation change, which, you know, you might not think that's a lot, but for Florida, that is a lot on a golf course, especially one so close to the Gulf of Mexico. And you walk around it and you see the overseeded turf. And I made the comment to one of my playing partners, Gary D'Amato, who's a longtime legendary golf writer in Wisconsin. I said, Gary, if besides the trees looking a bit different, I feel like I'm in Ohio or Wisconsin or New Jersey going around this golf course. It's a very difficult golf course. It ranks as one of the tougher on the PGA Tour each year. When you look at scoring averages, the winds can really whip with it being that close to the golf. So, yeah, that was a fun experience getting to play that a few weeks ago in some really nice weather. It was already close to being in tournament shape. I'm sure they're going to firm it up and grow the rough up even more than what I saw. And it's going to be that Florida swing's interesting. You know, to me, I enjoy the West Coast swing more. I just like that style of golf and those courses more. But that's kind of the cool thing about watching professional golf in the winter is it takes you to different places and it takes you to warmer places. And you kind of look forward to those tournaments each weekend before we can really get outside and start playing golf and doing outdoor activities in earnest.
2 more questions before we cut you loose. First and foremost, we are definitely going to come back around to Copperhead again as we get closer to that actual event. But I'm actually going to be in an outdoor environment next week down at spring training in Goodyear, Arizona. Any decent tracks that you know of? Not that I'm going to have a whole lot of downtime when I'm out there, but when you think about that area, Phoenix, Goodyear, what are some of your favorite tracks in that area?
Yeah, and I'm sure you probably have some listeners that might be heading down to spring training, and what an opportunity for you, Bull, to go down there, and I'm very happy that you get this chance. And you know, for any listener that gets to make the trek to Arizona this time of year, that's awesome. I was actually down there last January working on some stories in a project, and I'll give you the name of one that maybe doesn't quite have that external buzz like a TPC Scottsdale or some of the others. It's called Mountain Shadows, and if you don't have a lot of time, it's the perfect place to play. It's what we would call now a upscale par 3 course. So all the holes are pretty much 210 yards or less. They got great views of Camelback and Mummy Mountain, and you really feel like you're on a high-end golf course because it's an overseeded course, and the playing conditions are just like what you would see at some of the high-end resort courses and public courses there, or private courses. But the great thing is it takes half the time to play because, you know, it's a smaller footprint. You can get 18 holes in around 2 hours on this, walk, carry your clubs. Like I said, it feels like you're just at a country club, but with a smaller footprint. So if you're time pressed going down there, that would be one that I would definitely check out. I had a chance to play it last January, and I'm sure as the segment progresses and evolves, we'll talk about the shorter golf options that are out there because they're becoming more prevalent in the golf industry, and it gives people that are time crunched an opportunity to play some great golf.
Mountain Shadows, too. I mean, that's a really cool name. That should get at least 18 out of me just based on name alone. Well, last weekend, the golf show was in town, the golf and travel show. You mentioned you might be heading out there to check out a new driver. Guy, I went down there on Saturday. I came back home and told my wife I could have spent six figures at that place. There was so much awesome golf gear. Did you have a chance to get down there to the IX Center?
Yeah, I was eating lunch on Sunday, and I was like, should I go? Should I not go? Do I need some time away from golf? Because I'm always thinking about it, but I only live 2.5 miles from the IX Center, so I'm like, yeah, I'll go. What the heck? And I went there, and the thing that really surprised me, I'm not sure what it was like on Saturday, Bull, but it was packed on Sunday. There were a lot of people there. It was almost shoulder to shoulder, people looking at equipment, testing their swings, you know, talking about travel packages. Did you notice that on Saturday? Was there a big crowd and buzz there?
Yes, there were a lot of people there on Saturday, like to the point where there were enough clubs and there was enough gear and 75,000 different hats to go around. But yeah, I mean, because they didn't have the whole IX Center open either. It was, I think, just about a quarter of it was open.
Yep, and that's smart. I mean, it's not as big as the auto show or the home and garden show or something like that, right? It's not one of the gigantic shows in the IX Center. But, you know, for me, somebody that works in the golf industry and is very passionate about it, that's just, you know, sometimes I'm so focused on the facilities I visit and I'm dealing with people that work in golf and I'm getting these kind of tours with the golf course superintendents and sometimes meeting the general managers and the architects and the builders, is that sometimes I forget that how much people love golf. And that's another, you know, seeing the IX Center have that many people there last weekend looking at gear, you know, testing their swings, looking at travel packages, you know, talking golf with their friends, walking around with drinks in their hand. That kind of reaffirmed to me how much people, even in a cold weather place like Cleveland, Ohio, love golf. And there were some good deals there. You know, I strategically went towards the 4 p.m. closing time on Sunday to try to get some deals and do a little bit of negotiation at the end of the show, and it worked out well for me on that end.
Very nice. See, I should have used that tactic, but this is the first time at the golf show for me, so I'll keep that in mind.
Yeah, I finally upgraded my driver. So I bought my driver as a Black Friday special in 2009, and do you know what happened that Thanksgiving night in 2009?
Oh boy, what do you got?
That's when Tiger was, it became public that he was having extramarital affairs. So, I don't know why, but I just will always remember the day that I bought my Adams Speedline driver because it was that Black Friday after everybody found out that shocking news that really changed golf and changed the course of Tiger Woods' life and career. And, so I figured somebody that plays as much as me, I think after 10 years that it was time for an upgrade.
Yeah, and it sounds like you got a pretty darn good deal on your upgrade as well. So a tip of the cap to you, sir. Very, very well done.
Yep, I've been eyeing that Titleist 917 D3 since 2017, so finally pulled the trigger.
Very nice.
Hopefully, I just rattled off a sponsor's name. Hopefully you don't have competing manufacturer sponsor this segment yet.
Hey, not just yet, but hopefully that moment is approaching. Guy, as always, my friend, a pleasure catching up, and we will definitely do this again next week.
Yep, thanks, Bull, and have a great trip to Arizona. I know you're going to enjoy it, and your listeners are going to enjoy hearing your reports.
Absolutely. Well, hopefully I take it easy when I play Mountain Shadows this week. That'll be a lot of fun. I think based on name alone, that sounds like that will be a blast. Great, great stuff, as always, with Guy Cipriano, the editor at Golf Course Industry Magazine.